This message, titled A Giving Ministry from 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com. Well, brothers and sisters, I want to begin again this evening with a question that we have often asked as we have come to this second chapter in the letter to the Thessalonians. And that question is this: why do Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy spend a significant amount of time in this letter reminding the church what their ministry had been like among them? To put that question in a slightly different way, what's the point? How is this relevant? How is it applicable? How is it significant or important to these people? That's not a useless question to ask. As we understand some of the background of what was going on to these Christians living in Thessalonica, we might say that their lives were lived in a time of great crisis. As a church, they were likely very small, very few in number. As a church, they were new converts. There had not been a long family tradition of Christianity in the lives of these people, not a foundation that had been laid very solidly in their lives. And as a church, they were suffering greatly for the cause of the gospel. They were suffering persecution. They were being fined, money fines imposed upon them by the government for the things that they believed. This church lived and carried about their daily routines in a city that was extraordinarily wealthy. They were in a city that was extremely culturally important. They were also in a city that was extremely hostile to the claims of Christianity. And maybe if we step back for a moment and we think about this opening question, if you were to write to a church like that, what would you say? What are the important truths that a church living in that way needs to know? Because of all the things that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy could have written about, we find in this second chapter, the major portion of this letter is taken up by these three men, an apostle, a prophet, and a preacher, telling the church in Thessalonica to remember what the gospel ministry is all about. And why did they need to know it? Brothers and sisters, why do we need to know what the gospel ministry is all about? Well, as we began this second chapter, I tried to give you a helpful understanding of why all of us, whether we will ever serve in the ministry of the word or not, why it is that we need to know what gospel ministry is. First, we need to know it so that we know what we are to expect from the ministry of the church. Many ministries, many churches crumble because of expectations. And Scripture tells us, 1 Thessalonians 2 tells us, here's what you ought to expect from gospel ministry. Understanding what gospel ministry is not only gives us right biblical expectations, but it teaches us how to evaluate gospel ministers. It tells us how to evaluate the ministry of the church. We are cautioned again and again in the New Testament that in these last days, many people claiming to speak in the name of Jesus will come and they will actually lead people astray. So all of us need the discernment to know what are the distinguishing marks of true gospel ministry. And I would suggest and have suggested that another reason we all need to know is so that you know specifically how to encourage those who are given in their lives to gospel ministry. And so far, as we've been going through 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, we've seen a number of things. We've seen that the subject matter of the ministry is the gospel. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say, when we came to Thessalonica, that's really all we came for, to declare to you the gospel of God. The gospel is the subject matter of gospel ministry. We've also seen the method that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy employed. What is the best method for gospel ministry? They say, we declared to you the gospel of God. The method of gospel ministry is preaching. For though it is foolishness and weakness to this world, Scripture tells us it is the wisdom and the power of God. We have seen in this chapter the motives of gospel ministry, both what they are not. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy saying in these chapter, in these verses, that they did not come with words of flattery. They did not come in order to please man, but their motive was to please God. And we have seen the manner in which the ministry was carried out. Again, not as a ministry that sought to please men, but a ministry that sought to please God. And 2 weeks ago, as we came to this text, we saw another mark, another gospel ministry manner. So the gospel ministry is to be carried out with a certain amount of tenderness. That Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy likened their ministry to that of a nursing mother. And this evening, I want us to look at another characteristic, another quality of gospel ministry as we have it in these words. And if I can summarize it, it is this, that gospel ministry is characterized by giving. Gospel ministry is characterized by giving. At the end of the day, gospel ministry is not about receiving. Gospel ministry is not about getting, but gospel ministry is about giving. The Apostle Paul, the prophet Silvanus, and the preacher Timothy write in verse 8, "So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God." A preeminent mark, a quality, a characteristic of gospel ministry is that it is a ministry that gives. And brothers and sisters, that shouldn't surprise us. That shouldn't fall on our ears in a surprising way. In fact, it really is the imitation of Jesus Christ. You remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 20, verse 28. He says, "The Son of Man did not come to be served. The Son of Man has come to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." As Jesus himself spared nothing in giving of his own flesh and blood for the sake of the gospel, so we see that the ministry of the gospel is to have that same character. It is to be a ministry defined by giving. And what I want you to see in these verses this evening is that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy really illustrate that in three ways. They illustrate it in three ways. First, they illustrate it by way of a picture. Secondly, they illustrate it by way of a policy. And third, they illustrate it by way of a pattern. And I want to focus on those three things with you this evening. First, I want you to see that this principle, that gospel ministry is about giving, that they illustrate this truth with a picture, with a picture. I know we're backtracking a little bit to recover some ground that we have already covered, but you remember what Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy said in verse 7, as they note the gentleness and the tenderness that at times is to accompany the gospel ministry. They say in verse 7, "We were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children." We saw last time that that image, even as they write that, is one of the most tender and one of the most gentle images imaginable in this world. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say that characterized our ministry. Our ministry was characterized by the same gentleness that a nursing mother shows to her own children. And then in verse 8, they write, "So, being affectionately desirous of you," that same affection, that same desire that a mother shows towards her nursing children. And they really emphasize that, don't they, at the end of verse 8, "You had become very dear to us." You get the sense that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy had a great degree of affection and love for these Christians in Thessalonica. And they say because of that, because of the overwhelming love that we had for you, because of the affection that was born in our hearts, no doubt by a work of the Spirit, they say we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but to share with you our own selves, our own selves. And again, just more by way of reminder than preaching something new this evening. They're painting a picture there, aren't they? They're painting a picture because this idea of sharing not only the gospel of God with you, but our own selves with you, it's the picture that motherhood itself gives us. The picture that motherhood gives us. You think of the way in which a child is conceived in the womb of its mother. And that child survives, and that child's life is dependent upon an act of giving, upon an act of self-sacrifice in a very real sense on the part of that mother. Her strength becomes the strength of that child. Her energy becomes the energy of that child. Her health becomes the health of that child. Her life becomes the life of that child. What we see in motherhood is that a mother, her very self, is given to her child. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying that same giving, the giving of a mother to her child. And maybe just briefly, it's worth mentioning this evening that the giving of a mother to their child does not end when a child is born. I've seen many of you as mothers. I know how you act, and I know that so much of motherhood is lived giving. Giving, giving, giving. Giving time and giving energy and giving strength and giving your schedule and giving sleepless nights for the sake of your children. And it is true that in many ways motherhood is lived there in the giving, with such very little return for the work and for the labor. And you see, that's what a mother does. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy, again, they use that picture to characterize gospel ministry. The same way that a mother gives herself, her very self, to her children, Paul and Silvanus and Timothy are saying, that's how we give ourselves to you. We didn't come to you simply preaching the gospel. That's what they did. That was the subject matter of their ministry. But in preaching the gospel to this church, they write, we also gave our own selves. We spared no expense. We gave you all that we had for the sake of the gospel. And this picture shows us the giving characteristic of gospel ministry. But they illustrate this truth in a second way. In a second way. They illustrate this truth that gospel ministry is primarily about giving and not taking by what we might call this evening a policy. A policy. These three men, as they came to Thessalonica, really instituted what you might call a financial policy for their time laboring in this church. I want you to look with me at verse 9. In verse 9, they say, "For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God." Look at that little word in verse 9, burden. "We labored and toiled night and day while we were with you so that we would not be a burden to you." Quite literally, that word burden means a financial burden. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying, when we were among you, we labored both day and night. We toiled day and night so that we would not be a financial burden to you, so that we would not be, quite literally, we would not be an expense to you. Simply stated, these three men are saying, we did not seek to be paid for the ministry. We didn't come to you and we didn't ask that you contribute to our necessities. We didn't come to you and ask you to pay us for our work. They had another job. They held another job, most likely some manual labor. We know from Acts 18 that the Apostle Paul was a tent maker, a rather blue-collar job. Paul knew what it was to sweat and to toil in making of tents, and we're not told specifically the character of the work that they picked up as they were there in Thessalonica. But Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying, we labored and we toiled so that we wouldn't be an expense to you, so we wouldn't be a financial burden to you. And you see, as we think about that, it's worth pausing. It's worth pausing to think through the reality of what these men are saying to this church in Thessalonica. And it's worth pausing because, to put it bluntly, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy would have had a right to be paid for their gospel labor. I want you to look back with me at verse 6. In verse 6, they write, "Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ." You'll notice apostles is in the lower case. That's because Silvanus and Timothy were not apostles. In the upper case, letter A, apostles of Christ. But they're saying as messengers of Christ, that's what apostle means, a messenger. They're saying as messengers of Christ, we could have made demands of you. We could have. The word demands there is quite literally burdens. We could have burdened you, they are saying. I want you to see that. They're saying we had rights. We could have come to you and we could have made demands of you as apostles of Jesus Christ. And we might ask the question, well, how? What is the demand? What is the burden that they could have brought to this church in their gospel ministry? Well, for our purpose this evening, what I want you to see from the scriptures is that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy had every biblical right to seek payment for their gospel ministry. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy had a right to be paid for the preaching of the gospel. And I know, and maybe I sense it more this evening than you do, that things get a little bit awkward when you begin talking about the relationship between the ministry and money. But this is part of the whole counsel of God. And we need to understand that there is a biblical reason to pay pastors. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying, we didn't take that payment. And that's interesting. The Apostle Paul, who, as we've identified again and again, is an author of this letter, Paul, writing to the church in Corinth, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, actually tells the church in Corinth, pastors have a right to be paid. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, he uses all these different examples, and he says, hey, church in Corinth, would you expect a soldier to serve by his own expense? Right? And it's a question that still resonates with us. Can you imagine if somebody wanted to enlist in the military? And we said, great, you can enlist in the military, now pay your expenses. You got to buy your gun, you got to buy your uniform, you got to buy your ammo, you've got to buy your ticket into the middle of a war zone. We expect you to do that by your own expense. And Paul says to the church in Corinth, he says, do you expect that? Do you expect somebody to enlist in the army at their own expense? And then he goes on to use another illustration. And he says, do you expect, church in Corinth, those who plant vineyards, do you expect them to not enjoy the fruit of their labor? Do you expect that after they have toiled and after they have labored and after they have planted this vineyard, that they don't have a right to eat of the fruit of the vineyard? Can you imagine telling a farmer in our community that? Well, I know you tilled the field, you planted it, you fertilized it, you nurtured it, you grew it, you harvested it, but don't you dare eat one product that came from your field? All of us would look at that and we know how Paul would answer that question. You would never tell somebody that. The Apostle Paul uses another example and he says, those who tend a flock, do they not have a right to drink the milk that comes from that flock? And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 11, Paul tells the church, if we have sown spiritual things among you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If we sow spiritual things, is it too much that we reap material things? And Paul goes on to say, this is our rightful claim. And I want you to know this evening, there in 1 Corinthians 9:11, Paul uses strong language. He is saying, we have a right to be sustained materially as we have ministered spiritually to you. And to remove all doubt, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 14, he goes on to write, in the same way, the Lord commands that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. Again, strong words. Paul says, this isn't just a human idea. This isn't just a church thinks it's a good idea to pay their pastor. That's what Paul says, the Lord commands it. You see, the Lord commands, as Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy come to Thessalonica, the Lord commands that they have a right to be paid for their spiritual ministry. Or in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 17 and 18, Paul, as he sets things straight, as he instructs Timothy, here's how I want you to pastor, here are the things that I want you to tell the church. He tells Timothy, here's one of the things you need to tell the church. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17 and 18. Paul says, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and in teaching. For the scriptures say, you shall not muzzle an ox while it's treading the grain. The laborer deserves his wages. And again, brothers and sisters, Paul's using strong language. He is saying those who give themselves to the public preaching and teaching of the word, they deserve wages. Just like when you wake up tomorrow morning and you go to your job, your boss owes you your wages. You have worked and it is right that you should be paid for that. And Paul, that's the force of what Paul is saying. The laborer is worth his wages. And it's true that Paul wrote in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 3, just a couple chapters before he writes that, he says that an overseer, an elder in the church must not be greedy. He must not be greedy for much money. But Paul makes very clear that those who labor in preaching and teaching are worthy to receive a wage. And you see, what that means is that as Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy go to the Thessalonians, as they declare the gospel of God, they have every right under God to be paid for their work. If I can put it very bluntly this evening, I don't know if it's overly helpful. It's a thought that I've often had. The Bible really teaches that churches are required to have really only two budget line items. The church is required to have money for the sake of mercy, to provide for those who are in need, especially in the household of God. But the Bible also teaches that the church is to pay those who labor for the sake of the gospel and give themselves to the preaching and the teaching of the word. And you see, brothers and sisters, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy knew that. They knew that they had every right to come to Thessalonica and to request, even as they sowed the seed of the gospel, that they should be given material provision. There are times in Paul's ministry where He makes very clear, I was paid for what I did. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 18, he says, I accepted support. And as I accepted support from the church, it wasn't robbery. I wasn't robbing them blind. But I accepted the support. I accepted financial remuneration for the work that I had done. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 17 and 18, he tells the church in Philippi, I've received full payment. I am well supplied for. And you see, the reason I want you to see that and to understand the biblical teaching there is because then when we come to verse 9, we really see the wonder of what Paul and Silvanus and Timothy say. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a financial burden to any of you while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. And it really informs us that as these three men came to this church, there was a concentrated effort, a carefully made decision. You might call it, as I've said, a financial policy saying we will not accept the money that we deserve as preachers of the gospel. We will forego payment for the cause of the gospel and for the good of this church. We know that God has commanded it, but we are willing to go without it. We are willing in Thessalonica to carry on a free ministry. And why is it that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are able to do that? Well, if I can suggest it this evening, the freedom to do that comes from the understanding that gospel ministry is primarily about giving. It is not about receiving, and it is not about getting. It is not about accumulating to yourself as much as you possibly can and accumulating to yourself wealth and material prosperity. Gospel ministry is primarily defined by giving of oneself, by giving of one's resources, by giving of one's time and one's energy for the sake of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that Christ might be born in the hearts through the preaching of the word in those he has come to save. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are living in light of that, and they feel the freedom to be able to say to this church, we don't want to be a financial burden upon you. We rather would have the gospel sown and bearing fruit in Thessalonica than to burden you with financial expenses. And the reason they can do that, brothers and sisters, is because gospel ministry is about giving. It is about giving. And woe to those men who would come to the ministry of the gospel aiming simply to accumulate to themselves the treasures and the riches of this world. They will have their reward in full in this life, and they will reap none in the life to come. But Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say, here's gospel ministry. It's not all about receiving and taking. It's about giving. And they illustrate that truth in the policy that they set. Finally, this evening, they illustrate this truth, this idea that gospel ministry is primarily about giving. They illustrate this truth by what I want to call a pattern. A pattern. In verse 9, again, for you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. There's an emphasis there. Those aren't just uselessly repeated words, labor and toil. They mean something a little distinct. Labor simply means that work which produces exhaustion. Many of us know what it is to labor. We know what it is to labor under the hot Kansas sun. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are saying, that's what we did. You remember, brothers, our labor. You remember that we carried about certain work that produced in us absolute exhaustion. And then they add this second word, for you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. Toil carries with it the idea of hardship. Right? It's not easy labor. It's not easy work. It is something that exhausts us, and it is something that is accompanied by hardship. To put it simply, as they put these two words together, they are saying, you remember, brothers, You remember our hard and our exhausting labor. They're saying, when we came to you, we weren't idle. When we came to you, we weren't lazy. When we came to you, we didn't just sit on our duffs and do nothing all day long as the sun rose and as the sun set and as it came up again the next morning. They are saying, when we came to you, here's what characterized our time among you: hard and exhausting labor. And then look, in verse 9, you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked day and night. They're saying, here was the pattern of our lives. Here was the tempo of our life. Here's the rhythm of our lives when we were among you, again and again, day and night, day after day after day. We gave ourselves to hard and exhausting labor. And when they write that, I think many commentators have rightly pointed out that this hard and exhausting labor, it included a certain manual labor. But it does not disclude the hard and exhausting labor of the ministry. And they're saying, here is the pattern of our lives, and you remember it well. You know, it's really quite good that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy would give themselves to hard and exhausting labor for the sake of the gospel. It's right that they should do that. I want to remind you this evening that the Bible has a very high work ethic. And what I mean by that is the Bible does not look at our vocation and as our work primarily in terms of making a lot of money or finding the most meaningful job or the most significant job in all of the world. But the Bible's work ethic does stress in the strongest terms the value of working hard. Work is not the result of the fall. When God had created Adam and Eve and he had created the garden, what do we read? We read that he put Adam and Eve in the midst of the garden to tend it, to work it. This is something that God gave to pre-fall humanity to give meaning, to give value, and to give significance to the time that we spend. The Bible has a very high valued work ethic. And in fact, it's interesting, as Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy mention it here in 1 Thessalonians. You remember, brothers, our labor and our toil. We worked night and day. In the second letter of the Thessalonians, they essentially write the same thing again. But I want you to hear these words in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 7. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say, Keep away from a brother who is walking in idleness. For you yourselves know how you ought to imitate us, because we were not idle when we were with you, but with toil and labor, we worked day and night to give you an example to imitate. It's interesting, they say, as we labored both manually and as we labored for the sake of the ministry, they're saying, we actually gave you, we provided you with an example that you are supposed to imitate. You too are supposed to work and to labor and to toil in the days that you spend on this earth. And they say, you know, we were not idle. And why is that? Why is it that they went to Thessalonica and they were compelled to labor and to toil and to work day and night? Because, again, brothers and sisters, they understood that gospel ministry is about giving. It is about giving of your time and of your efforts and of your strength. It is about giving of yourself. It's true that in manual labor, many people expend strength. And they're saying, even in gospel ministry, that's what we do. We give all of our strength and all of our energy to this thing we call gospel ministry. And if we value that in manual labor, how much more we ought to value this hard work ethic in the ministry. The old Baptist commentator John Gill wrote this: the ministry of the word is a work, and a laborious one. The ministry of the word is a work and a laborious one when closely attended to. A preparation for it by prayer, reading, meditation, and much study are very wearisome and fatiguing. And to preach the word in season and out of season, with patience and with doctrine, is very laborious. And it is often made the more difficult through malice and opposition of enemies, and even the weakness of friends. Do you see what Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say? That's what gospel ministry is. Gospel ministry isn't about being lazy. Gospel ministry isn't about a life of ease. Gospel ministry calls for those who labor in the ministry of the word, for labor and for toil and for ceaseless and tireless efforts for the sake of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And they are able to say that, they are able to write that, because they understand here is a characteristic, here is a quality of gospel ministry. It is more about giving than it is about receiving. So here we have, in this letter, as we think about the qualities of the ministry, there is a gentleness, there is a tenderness that is to accompany gospel ministry. But what we have in these words is a reminder to us that gospel ministry, by its character, is one of service. Even as Jesus, the Son of Man, said, "I did not come to be served, but I have come to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many." So true biblical gospel ministry aims to give of resources and of strength and of energy and of time, of schedules, to give one's very self for the sake of the gospel. Let's pray.